Cork, overwhelming favourites heading into tomorrow's Munster football semi-final with Clare in Ennis. It's a repeat of last year's provincial decider. The Rebels won by 12 points. Cork making one change from the win over Limerick in the quarter-final. Owen Cadogan replaces Paddy Cassano cornerback. We have the views of Mick O'Dwyer and Graham Canty on the way. First, we'll hear from Conor Coonahan, who's been in conversation with Joe.
I look reasonably pleased with the first round of a championship, but yeah, again, wouldn't be getting carried away with it. You know, first 25 minutes of that game, it was 4-3, and you know, if Limerick got the goal, we got the goal, then yeah, you know, who's to say? It certainly wouldn't have been as easy as what it turned out to be. So, look, happy to win, happy with the victory, but looking forward to the next day now and seeing can we build on that.
Good score to put up as well, though, wasn't it, in Mayo?
Yeah, if it probably was, but you know, I still think there was a lot more opportunities for scores that we didn't take, and you know, scores won't be that easy to come by the next day, so we'll need to be better in terms of our execution the next day.
Does it annoy you but when people say like you went on and won the game so well that you learned nothing, and if you scrape through then there's something wrong? Does that annoy you?
Yeah, sure. Hey, look, I suppose it's all about performance, and you know, I mean, if you win, you could win playing only reasonable and win well, and you could win playing very well and win by a small margin. So it all depends on, you know, how much, you know, you value the opposition. And, you know, I suppose, contrary to previous years, the opposition that Limerick provided last year wasn't on par with what they would have done previously. So, you know, I wouldn't be building too much into it. Like,
yeah, a lot of talk about Brian Hurley. Obviously, he played so well, and he did so well for Castlehaven against Nemo in the replay and all that kind of stuff as well. And been so good for the under-21s as well. I suppose, is there a job in that to keep his feet in the ground a small bit?
Look, I think Brian is level-headed enough, you know, and I suppose the key for him is to keep it simple, and he's done that to date, and you know, and is playing well, and you know, every reason to believe that he'll maintain that, because as I said, he's quite a level-headed lad.
Yeah. What are you expecting from a Mick O'Dwyer managed Clare?
I don't know. I wonder whether we'll get the blanket defence or not. But Mika's going to be well organised. He's a very experienced man. You know, there's very few people will know as much about Cork as Mika, and there's no one that'd like to turn Cork over much more than Mika. So, look, from that point of view, you know, he certainly won't be leaving anything to chance. But look, at the end of the day, you know, the game is about players and getting out there and playing, and, you know, if our girls get out and play to their ability, then I believe they can win the game. Like,
yeah, we're talking to Paddy there, and he was saying, like, in fairness, Clare are probably building up to this game for a long, long time, so they'll come flying out of the traps.
Oh, look, absolutely. You know, I'd say once the draw was made, you know, the fact that they're playing in Ennis and everything, they're saying, lads, we're going to give this one hell of a cut. Mm. And, you know, any team that, you know, has that type of an attitude, you know, will certainly put you under pressure if you don't get to grips with them early.
After doing so well against them last year and beating very well in the Munster final, was it kind of hard to keep complacency out of the picture?
Well, I suppose I'd like to believe that, you know, that we have a competitive squad now, and 15 guys will get the opportunity to start this game. There's obviously going to be 5 or 6 more, you know, coming in, so everybody needs to be focused. If they're not, there's a consequence for them individually, and there's a consequence for the team. But, you know, I'd like to believe the fellas' heads are right.
And I suppose the carrot to impress management ahead of to just maybe set up a Munster final with Kerry and Killarney is there as well?
Yeah, look, I mean, I suppose the carrot for any guy going out, you know, from a management point of view is to perform, and to perform to the plan, and you know, stick to it, and you know, guys that do that will be persisted with, and that's the reward.
There's a lot of talk about the big wins that the big teams are having, but it's nothing new really, is it? Like, you've had these kind of margins other years too, but there just seems to be more talk about it this year.
I don't know. I mean, I think there's probably, like, in Munster this year, in the games to date, there has been that, which is a bit surprising. Like, I mean, if you look at our own situation with Limerick in previous years, like, Jesus, it's poles apart from what it was this year. Like, so I suppose I can understand how people might talk about that then.
But do you think it's premature then for people to be suggesting a 2-tier championship?
I do. I mean, you know, I mean, would you have said that in 2012 and 2011 and 2010? You wouldn't. So let's not press the panic button yet.
And I suppose the fact that Cork and Kerry are on opposite sides of the Munster draw exacerbates it a bit, because if you were playing Kerry in the first round, then two of the other Munster counties would have a kind of a closer game, and it wouldn't be as eye-catching like the big scorelines.
Yeah, and look, I suppose, you know, those games, as I said, Cork and Limerick and Kerry and Waterford, there were stages of those where they were quite competitive for you know, half the game nearly. And you know, the fact that teams, you know, probably collapsed to some extent, you know, that you couldn't visualise that happening too often.
The big red bench on Cork Shell FM, and that is Conor Cunahan as we look ahead to Cork and Clare tomorrow in Ennis. Gonna hear from the Bannerman now. Gonna hear from the legendary Mick O'Dwyer speaking to our colleagues in Clare FM.
Yeah, well, it's great to be looking forward to the championship, and as it's the only thing that matters, I suppose, now game championship football. That's what it's all about, both at club and inter-county level. So we're looking forward to Sunday. We certainly are. We have a number of injuries and all to that, but no serious injuries of any consequence. I think Enda Coughlin and Michael O'Shea are definitely out there, big losses to us. But beyond that, all the other players are in pretty good shape. And we'll be giving Cork a right cracking on Sunday. Cork are an exceptionally good team, we know that. They're one of the best in the country at the moment. It's amazing they haven't won a few more All-Irelands with the players that they have. But however, that's all the better. You're better off to be playing the best, isn't it? Because at some stage, they'll have to be played anyway. It's your right time to meet them in the first round.
Looking forward to a championship campaign with Clare. What's the mood amongst the camp like?
Well, the mood is very good anyway. And the players have put a big effort in, and we've had a wonderful contribution from the county board. They have done everything possible to help us in any way we needed help. So everything is going well, and a lot of people will say that hurling is a big game in Clare, but they take football pretty serious here as well. But hurling is a big game, we all know that, and they're going well at the moment, and it'd be great to see both teams doing well this year.
You met Cork plenty of times, and you were a player and a manager as well. It's always a special clash against the Rebels.
Always is, and always have been down the years, both as a player and as a manager. I've had some great days against them, so we're just hoping we'll have one on Sunday week as well.
No, you're playing here in Cusick Park as well. Is that a big help to yourself?
Well, I suppose it must be an advantage to play at home at any time. I mean, when we had games at home in Kerry, they were great, and when I had games at home in Aughrim with Wicklow and all these, it was a definite advantage, so it must be an advantage to Clare as well to be playing in Ennis.
What are your thoughts, I suppose, on the early rounds of the Munster Championship? Your Division 4 rivals didn't do so well against Kerry and Cork in previous rounds.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll just have to remember that you're the two best football teams in the country at the present time are in Munster, Kerry and Cork, and that's a well-known fact. So, I mean, if they were in any other province, they'd be beating all the teams there as well. So, but the only thing about it is the other counties in Munster must keep working away at their game and work a little bit harder. And if they do that, they'll get up to their level in time as well.
Not Donegal and Dublin might have something to say about the best counties in Ireland, but there isn't a gap as severe maybe in Ulster compared to Munster. Obviously, the Dubs beat Westmeath, but does something need to change? Does there need to be help for counties like Clare and Limerick and Waterford?
Yeah, but still, I mean, Cork and Kerry last year were only just pipped in the championship, so they're up there. There's about six or eight teams at the moment at the very top, and all the rest of them are down the line. So it's up to all the other counties to put in a bit of extra work. I mean, Donegal were down in the lower divisions about 4, 5, 6 years ago as well, and they have come from nowhere with the amount of effort they put in. So it's all about the work that you put in. Donegal have put it in. Dublin have had a big organisation at underage level, and now they're coming through. Kildare have done pretty well at underage level, in Leinster as well over the last few years, and they're coming through as well, so it can make an interesting championship.
Does June time always give you a special buzz, Mico, involved in championship teams?
Well, yes, with the arrival of the Larks and the whole lot, the Corncrake and what have you, it's great when they arrive around the place. They had the cuckoo the other day, and that's a real sign of summer and championship football.
Finally, I suppose, Mico, what's it going to take for Clare to get over Cork and book a place in another Munster final the second year in a row?
Well, I mean, we're in the semi-final of the championship anyway in Munster, which is good. It'll take an almighty effort, and the Clare players will have to be at their very best if we're to beat Cork on Sunday.
The inimitable Mick O'Dwyer there speaking to our colleague Sinclair Finn, giving us some of his avian knowledge as well as he looks ahead to tomorrow's clash with Clare. And then it's going to wrap up our preview now with Graham Canty, who spoke to Joe at the recent press night.
The feeling is that, you know, we're preparing again for a tough battle. Clare are home above and in us, so you know, prepare as well as we can, give it our best shot in the night.
Yeah, I suppose just a good look back on the Limerick game, could it have gone any better really?
Things went okay, you know, we settled well enough at the start, got a couple of scores on the board, and you know, finished out the first half well, and kind of picked up where we started in the second half, and things went okay, you know, especially with some newer lads starting, you know, maybe some of the younger lads that played well, like that's all good, and it's good for competition places and stuff like that.
Yeah, is it strange for yourself seeing so many new faces in there? It's a bit unrecognisable team almost from a few years back.
Yeah, well, the team changes the whole time. You know, I think from year to year there's always one or two new faces. You know, if you go back maybe 3-4 years now, yeah, there are a number of changes, but it happens every year. But it's good to see new blood coming in, and especially when they're coming in and doing so well.
Just in terms of, like, I suppose you'd be one of the more experienced lads now, would you feel kind of more responsibility to have a chat with the lads, or just make yourself available to them maybe?
Not really, I just conduct myself the way I have the last number of years. You know, I don't change a whole lot, do what I can to try and encourage the younger lads, and, you know, but they're good lads anyway. You know, most of them have come through, say, John Cleary's hands under 21, so yeah. You know, they come in with their own high standards anyway, and, you know, a lot of time they're pushing our standards on, which are great, but they have a good grounding there. You know, they know what it's like to work hard, and that's all they're doing when they're inside with us as well.
Just how important is it for them in their confidence that they got off to such a good start, such a big win, put up a good score in their first championship game?
I think for any sportsman, confidence is huge. You know, a lot of it, you know, when you perform the day, a lot of it, as people say, is from the shoulders up, and, you know, that little bit of confidence from a good performance is no harm.
What about yourself? Were you happy enough with your own performance?
Yeah, we're happy enough, but you'd be always looking to play better, like. But you know, once you're injury free, and you can work on a few things.
I suppose, like, obviously we would have seen you in midfield during the league and stuff like that, and maybe back at centre back for the game the other day. Do you feel like just being in that middle third, you have to have a flexibility to play anywhere at this stage?
Yeah, I think you do. Even during a game, if you're on the pitch for 40, 50, 60, 70 minutes, you'll change position anyway. You know, your marker will drag you. You'll be dragged from midfield into the full back line. You could be inside the full back line for 5 minutes. You could be marking your own man. You could be covering another man, and you have to be able to, you know, adapt that little bit. And that's the way the game has gone. So you could be 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, and you could be still marking the same man.
Yeah, do you have a preferred position though?
Anywhere on the 15 would be great. You know, if you can manage that. But no, I don't really know.
So is the one thing that's changed from Clare last year is that Mick O'Dwyer is in there now. How much does he bring to the table, do you think?
Yeah, Mick brings, you know, he brings his experience. You know, last number of years, any of the teams he's been with, he's got success with them. You know, he brings an element of hard work. He'll bring confidence into the team as well, and you know, I'm sure we'll see that next weekend.
I suppose, like, a lot of the teams that he has managed, maybe the kind of, I suppose, the lads at the Division 3, Division 4 teams, they always seem to raise their game whenever he's in charge. Is that something that Conor would have spoken to you about and stuff like that, just to be careful?
Well, you know, it's a monster semi-final. You know, you're not going to get anything easy. It's, you know, the carrot at the end of the stick is a monster final spot. You know, we're expecting a tough battle, and I'm sure we'll get it above an innocent. You know, to get into a Munster final, you're not expecting it to get easy, and Clare will be expecting the same, you know.
This was just in the Munster final last year, a good first half performance, got a few goals and kind of maybe killed the game off a little. Is that something obviously you'll be aiming for as well?
Good start is always the aim, but whether you get it or not, that's a different story. But yeah, last year, you know, it's well gone. You know, it's in the memory bank, and it's done and dusted. You know, you have two new teams. You know, it was on the Gaelic grounds last year, it's on in Innes this year as well. It's a total different ball game, really.
How big a factor will that be, do you think, the home advantage for them?
Yeah, home advantage. I'd rather play at home every day, but you know, it's worth a bit to Clare. They'll have more of the support there as well, so that's worth a little bit to you. Yeah, definitely.
The Big Red Bench on Cork Trail FM, and that is Graham Canty looking ahead to tomorrow's semi-final clash with Clare and Innes. In one word, Joe, do Clare have a chance tomorrow?
No.
Moving on, and the Cork management team have confirmed that Pat Cronin will not start against Clare next weekend in the Munster Hurling Championship semi-final. The Bishopstown player has just been released from hospital for treatment for a chest infection. Management also confirmed that Lorcan McLaughlin is out after he picked up a shoulder injury in training on Tuesday night. Joe, down at the press meeting last night, he spoke to Pat Cronin about the last few weeks.
Yeah, I suppose, look, I came out of hospital just last Tuesday there, so you know, I'm feeling much better than I was, but unfortunately, you know, the Clare game is coming a bit too soon for me probably, so just on the road to recovery anyway, just concentrating, trying to get my health back more than anything, you know.
How long have you been sick overall, do you think?
I'd say I've been sick, you know, for about, it's been a bone of 5 or 6 weeks, I'd say, coming up to it, but we sort of didn't know the full extent of it until I was admitted into hospital there, the June bank holiday weekend, and we got to the bottom of it anyway, thank God, so treating it now, you know.
Do you feel you rushed back a bit early for the Bishopstown game, do you think?
I suppose the week leading up to that Bishopstown game, I wasn't feeling myself. Basically, I didn't really know. Couldn't put a finger on what was wrong. But Troy took a shoulder to the chest in that game, and I ended up coughing up a bit of blood. So we went straight to CUH, and thankfully they helped me out there and got to the bottom of the problem. You know,
Jesus, sounds terrible. Is it as sick as you've ever been?
Yeah, it would have been definitely. It would have been as sick as I've ever been. Yeah.
And what sort of contact would you've been with the lads then, like in terms of the medical side of things? Would you've been in contact with them a lot in CUH and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. I think I've great credit has to go to Dr. Khan, who sorted me out big time with the contacts in CUH, and obviously Declan O'Sullivan as well, and Dr. Barry Plant, consultant up in CUH. Those three people have helped me out big time over the last couple of weeks, you know.
Have you trained since or anything like that, or have you been training?
Since the June Bank Holiday weekend, I've been in I was in hospital for 10 days and just over there since last Tuesday, so we haven't been training since then, you know.
But how frustrating is it though to be not fully fit, or maybe even going to miss the Clare again?
Yeah, it's unbelievably frustrating. I think any time you hear the draws are back in January or back in wherever they're made, you hear you're always building towards the first game, and we've been hearing Clare now for the last, or Clare, the winners of Clare Waterford, but since they've beaten Waterford, we've been hearing Clare for the last couple of weeks, and these are the games that you want to be playing in. But unfortunately, look, the sickness took over for me over the last couple of weeks, so it's disappointing to be missing out, but hopefully the lads will drive it on and be back for Munster final. It'll be brilliant, you know.
Were you pleased enough with your hurling up to when you got sick?
Yeah, I was pleased enough with the way things went out. And then the sickness, I wasn't feeling myself over the last couple of weeks, so now I'm on the road to recovery, thank God, so hopefully put all that behind me.
Yeah, and I suppose not only are you missing Laura Cohen and Paddy as well, so they're two big misses as well.
Yeah, they're massive. They're going to be massive losses, but we've known about Paddy for a while. Laura Cohen was unfortunate, so those lads are out, someone else has to put up their hand and be catapulted in, so, and you never know the way they react, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose people have been talking about the depth of the squad for a while, and even you need your squad these days, and this is going to be a real test of it now, isn't it?
Exactly. I think the days of starting and finishing with 15 players is definitely gone. We have a good strong squad at the moment, and the fellas that will come in, I've no doubt, will do very well.
Just on the games you played with Clare, obviously you're going to be in contact with all the lads in the lead up to the game. How impressed were you with, especially in the two league games, would say, and not the Waterford Crystal Cup game?
Yeah, I didn't play in the Waterford Crystal, but I played in the two league ones, and they're very impressive. They seem to have a very different system to a lot of teams that we play against, and it's something that we've done a bit of work on, and something that we're going to have to counteract big time on Sunday. So Clare are sort of a team that can put you away the last 15-20 minutes as well, and we've put a lot of emphasis on our fitness over the last couple of weeks when we had a break from the clubs, and we're looking good for Sunday, you know.
When you say a different kind of system to other teams, what is the tweak that they have, or the difference they have?
I think their forwards especially seem to be given a very freedom playing role, and create space for a two-man forward line. So look, it's when it works, it's nearly impossible to defend against, but we'll have to try our best not to make sure that the ball is going in, you know.
Yeah, I suppose a lot of people talking about the two games in the league in particular spoke about their fitness and maybe the way you faded towards the end, but talking to a few of the lads there, maybe they were telling me that you were building up the championship this year and maybe the league wasn't the priority. Do you think maybe people read too much into that kind of side of thing?
Yeah, I would agree with you there, to be honest. I think it's very hard during the league to get some good physical work done when you're playing week in, week out. So I mean, there's no doubt about it that we're way fitter than we are than we were during those league games when we played against Clare. We've put in some serious work over the last couple of weeks, and hopefully that will stand to us for Sunday.
Have you still been down to training and all that kind of stuff, been involved?
Yeah, exactly. I just got out of hospital last Tuesday, so first thing I was trying to do was get down to training straight away, and I've been doing that, and it's great to be back here in Park Ewing, Park Aoife, coming down to trainings, looking forward to a big championship game.
And just looking on in training, I suppose you have a different perspective. What's it looking like?
Yeah, the lads are looking fit, they're looking sharp. As I said, a lot of work has been put emphasis on fitness over the last couple of weeks, so now we're going back to sharpening up our hurling, and just looking from the side, everything's looking good, you know.
And I suppose just to look back on the Limerick and Tip game last weekend, did you watch it? Did you see yourself?
Yeah, I did. I watched it, and I think it's fantastic for hurling in general. And you can see the underdog triumphing in big games like that. So hopefully, it will be. Obviously, we're going to be underdogs against Clare, and we'll be hoping for something similar.
And is there a genuine belief on the panel that you can beat Clare and go
into a Munster final?
Yeah, there is. I think there's no point in showing up on Sunday if we weren't going to believe we're good enough to be in there contesting and winning Munster. So there's definitely a bit of, we're confident enough that we can do the job. Hopefully it's going to take a massive task, but hopefully everything will work out on Sunday, you know.
Big Red Ben, Sean Cork, Red FM, and that is Pat Cronin speaking to Joe last night. He won't be playing against Clare next week in the Munster Hurling Championship semi-final. And Joe, massive loss for the Rebels.
Huge loss, yeah. On the back of Laura Conwood-Loughlin being out and Paddy O'Sullivan being out as well. Three of their best players, really. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what Jimmy Barry-Murphy and the selection team come up with to kind of to negate that and to try to get a new system in place. But yeah, massive blow.
Let us know your thoughts on Cork and Clare tomorrow. Let us know how you think it's going to go. Joe reckons that Clare don't have any chance whatsoever.
No.
See? Told you. Just tweet us at Big Red Bench or you can text us on 0833173336. Still to come on the show, we're going to be talking rugby. We'll be talking about the Lions win today over the Waratahs. We're going to talk about Pat McQuaid and Cork City, all to come between now and 7 on the Big Red Bench.
The Big Red Bench. Red FM.
In the European Under-21 Championship, Spain have qualified for the final. They've beaten Norway 3-0 in the semi-final. And a contender for a goal of the tournament, I think, from Isco, the Malaga and Spanish youngster. He jinked it inside the player and beautifully kind of flicked it off the outside of his right boot.
It was a toe pig. It was a toesy. Come on, no.
Yeah, like for people who don't understand the word toesy, can you please explain it to
them? It's kicking it as hard as you can with your toe in a move that was banned in parks across Cork when I was a kid. You'd say like no lashers and no toesies when you started a game of ball. Those are the rules. Like,
but this was exquisitely placed into the top corner by the outside of his right foot. Nah, it wasn't a toesy.
All day long.
Not a toesy.
It's on our Twitter and Facebook page if you want to check it out, but it's a toesy all day long.
So that means it's officially a toesy. Poor Isco will be devastated tonight when he reads that. Okay, elsewhere, Spain, actually, they've won the game, so they're into the final. They'll play either Italy or Holland in that game. Their semi-final takes place later on this evening. Some big news in cycling today because Cycling Ireland voted not to nominate Pat McQuaid for a third term as president of the UCI. We'll have more on that very shortly as well with Brian Canty. And finally, in cricket, the international four-day match between Ireland and Australia A resumed this morning, but not for long. The visitors were 313 for 9 when play was suspended and eventually abandoned due to rain.
Toesy all day long. Right, no. The Lions put in a fantastic performance in Sydney this morning, beating the Waratahs 47-17. Johnny Sexton got the opening try. Lee Halfpenny scored 2 more and he rounded his tally up to 30 points from the boot. Tom Croft and Jonathan Davies also got over the line. Simon Zebo had an excellent Lions debut on the wing. Rugby writer with the score.ie, Sean Farrell, was watching the game for us this morning. He joins us on the line now. Thanks very much for joining us, Sean. First off, we'll get to Zebo's performance shortly. But firstly, did you expect the Waratahs, maybe I suppose, to put up a tougher test this morning?
I don't know about tougher tests. I suppose you never know quite what you're up against until the whistle goes in these tour matches. That can be taken as a good thing or a bad thing. But certainly the first half, it was a hell of a game. It was end-to-end with lots of running rugby and maybe just to kind of blow out to open up the lungs 7 days before a big test match. Obviously it tapered off in the second half, as pretty much every tour match so far has tended to do, but I think that can be put down to maybe the Lions' greater fitness than their adversaries in a club side like the Waratahs. You know, the greater fitness really does come through in that heat, and the more attritional it gets, the more the Lions are going to come out on top.
Yeah, Warren Gatland looked absolutely chuffed afterwards. Do you think it was their most complete performance so far?
Certainly, I think in the first half, they managed to put a good few moves together. Obviously, Jonathan Sexton, John Davies, Simon Zebo at the heart of a lot of things that went well. Second half was more of a matter of shutting things down and picking off opportunities when they came. But absolutely, there's very little for Warren Gatland not to be pleased about, aside from the injuries, which show no sign of stopping.
Yeah, Jamie Roberts looking like a torn hamstring for him there as well. He's a big loss because he looked like a definite starter.
He did up until today. As the final whistle went, he was hobbling down the tunnel, and I was thinking, he may have just played himself out of a spot in the test squad anyway. I mean, he was completely overshadowed by Jonathan Davies today. Didn't put in a good performance by Jamie Robert-Owen, very high standards at all today. And the injury was really just added to the insult of him not playing well. So I think he was due to play against the Brumbies in midweek, but definitely, I mean, hopefully he'll regain fitness in time for the second and third test. But I think for certain he wasn't. He had played himself out of the frame for test one.
Who would you have at 12? So would it be Davies or maybe even Billy 12 Trees?
I would think John Davies by now is nailed on for that number 12 slot. Yeah, himself and Brian O'Driscoll, you know, you'd fancy they can both rotate in and out of the inside and outside channels. They're probably tailor made for that dovetail and roll, a bit like Brian O'Driscoll used to do with Gordon Darcy with such great effect.
Yeah, there's a lot of flexibility there, right? We'll get to Simon Zeebo shortly, but I just wanted to talk about Sam Warburton, because watching the coverage on Sky, you would have thought he was the best player on the planet and he put in one of the best performances ever. They were gushing over him. What was your assessment of Warburton today?
Yeah, I mean, Sky have their own maybe agenda at times, and definitely Warburton, it was an improvement of his previous performances on the tour. But yeah, to zone in on the fact that a number 7 is making tackles and getting involved at the breakdown is a bit heavy on the sweetness maybe towards Sam Warburton. He was grand, he did his job, and I think because he's captain he'll start next week. But he certainly, if he wasn't captain, he would have a lot of work to do to get past Justin Tipperich and anyone else in that back row at the minute.
I know we're giving out about Sky gushing over Warburton, but we're going to gush over Simon Zeebo and his performance today. We were quite impressed. What do you think?
We are gushing a bit as well. But, I was worried about myself. I was wondering, are we just doing everything that Sky does, but with a different
Irish twist,
with a different flag over the man? Yeah. But he certainly hit the ground running, didn't he? Very unfortunate not to get a try with his very first touch in the Lions jersey. Everything else he did in the first half was absolutely brilliant as well. Every time he got the ball, you could feel that something was going to happen. He was obviously given a lot of license to roam in fields. He was playing first receiver an awful lot of the time and really keeping the defence on their toes that way. The thing about Zeebo is he gives the Lions something they really don't have, especially if, you know, Warburton is a doubt, Cuthbert off form, Maitland not looking great either. I mean, Zeebo is a man who can take the outside line on a man rather than just try and trample over him as George North might do.
Yeah, I was reading your piece on the score.ie this afternoon, and you mentioned the word bolter, and there's always a bolter in the Lions, a guy who comes out of nowhere and comes in for the first test and starts. Do you feel Simon Zeebo could be the this year's bolter?
He certainly gave himself every chance. He's, I didn't expect him to be as good as he was today after what he did in Houston 7 days ago, but obviously special circumstances surrounded that game. He knew he was about to get a call from the Lions. He obviously didn't want to jeopardize very much during that 80 minutes for Ireland. But he obviously ran out of steam in the second half a little bit, but that's to be expected after maybe a week's travel, a second time zone to get used to in as many weeks. And he just didn't put a foot wrong in that first half. And although he admitted himself he was blown a bit in the second, he still got a good kick chase in and put a good hit in on the fullback at a time when the Lions maybe needed a bit of go forward ball.
What about the other Irish guys today? Were you impressed with them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, John Texton, I mentioned, was pretty outstanding until he pulled up, maybe got a couple of bangs.
Yeah.
Focused in for special treatment, maybe a little bit from the Waratahs. Simon Zeebo, I've mentioned. Jimmy Heaslip probably had a bit of a quiet game. He was, a lot of people have tipped him to start at number 8, and you know, maybe in his own mind he just eased off the pedal a little bit today. And all tour long, I've kind of questioned that a bit. Heaslip has the extra the extra competition for places really helped him push and up his game. And you know, maybe that's the case a little bit, where he sees the finishing line and he's content to maybe leave well enough alone. But we'll see what happens the next couple of days. Paul O'Connell, excellent as always, ever since he came back in that Munster shirt against Connacht a couple of months back. He's had this tour in mind, and he is showing no signs of dropping his level one bit.
Now, Gatland, I'd imagine, has quite a lot of his starting 15 for the first test in his head already, but what positions are still open for you, do you think?
There would be a few, I think. Definitely the loose head prop looks to be open, although Mako Funipola, you would still fancy to start. It's really a case of having lost Cian Healy that position is open for anyone. The second row slot is still very much there. It's a case of Paul O'Connell and one more. Alan Whelan-Jones did himself no harm at all today again. Jeff Parling looked to be the man ahead, but it's all to play for in training each day every week. And then you come to the back row, and it's just a question of what makeup exactly is given to us by whether or not Sam Warburton plays or not. Could really shuffle one way depending on his fitness, and shuffle a completely different makeup if he's deemed not good enough to start.
Finally, Sean, we saw a video on the score.ie today of Simon Zeebo and Paddy Jackson lip syncing to Kanye and Jay-Z. Can you bust out your favourite hip hop verse for us right now?
I can't. No, all my rapping skills were left at the office door today. There's no rapping allowed in the office, I'm afraid. But it's something special from Simon Zeebo and Paddy Jackson. We've seen that kind of thing before from Jackson when he lip synced his whole way through the JCB song, but this was up another level again.
We'll wrap it up there, so Sean, use the pun. Thanks for your time, really appreciate it.
No worries.
Wrap it up, are you for real?
That is a perfectly placed pun, if you ask me.
How would you describe that Zeebo video that we saw this morning with Paddy Jackson?
I describe it as viral, because it is everywhere.
Make you sick, up.
Hey, it is absolutely everywhere. It's on, everybody's sharing it on Facebook and on Twitter, and I think it's quality. I actually think it's really, really good lip syncing, and like Sean mentioned there, the old Paddy Jackson JCB song was pretty good as well, but I think this takes it to the next level, and I think it's great. What do you think of it? Not a fan.
No.
Are you a fan of Simon Zeebo's rugby performance?
I am indeed. I thought he had an excellent game today. Jumped out of my seat when I thought he scored after 40 seconds.
Yeah,
went, yes! And then TMO, cursed TMO, taking it from us.
Yeah, he was, like, you know, we've been speaking to people over the last few weeks about maybe he might get a possible call-off if someone gets injured, and we were saying how Zeebo, ever since he was in Cork, I remember I saw him one day in Cork a few years ago and he was outstanding, and then when people were wondering how is he going to make the step up to Munster, slotted in seamlessly. Then he gets a call-up for Ireland, how's he going to fit in here, slotted in seamlessly. Then gets a call for the Lions, and today slotted in seamlessly. He just has that X factor, doesn't he? He just seems to, it's a confidence about the guy. And I like, you know, isn't like, he, obviously we know him from the flick and his flair and all that kind of stuff, but today he was actually very effective as well as a first receiver, and he was so dangerous, and I think he put his hand up massively to start that first test next Saturday.
And this is him speaking to Sky Sports afterwards.
Yeah, the coaches are very pro expressing yourself, and they just give me a license to just go into first receiver and just try and get my hands on the ball. So with the fellas like this lurking around the midfield, it makes the job a bit easier. There's a bit more holes when the defence will be focusing on guys like that, but yeah, it's great. Set up in a great type of rugby we're playing. So.
And so, I mean, straight off the plane, straight onto the field, Lions game, the pace of the game, okay, or just nothing like you've ever experienced before?
There was times where I was thinking, oh my God, I need another set of lungs, but it was great to just be on the field, and you don't think too much about those things when you're concentrating on a performance, but it's a day I'll never forget, and happy to be a part of it.
That was Simon Zeebo speaking after today's win over the Lions for the Lions over the Waratahs, 47 points to 17, and fingers crossed Simon Zeebo will now be a test starter. I'm going to talk cycling, and Pat McQuaid won't be nominated by Cycling Ireland for a third term as president of world governing body, the UCI. They held an emergency general meeting this morning. A motion to support him was defeated by 91 votes to 74. McQuaid was seeking the backing of his home union, but his candidacy came under criticism as a result of the fallout from the Lance Armstrong doping scandal. To discuss the story, Josie, speaking to cycling writer with the Irish Examiner and Sticky Bottle, Brian Canty.
For Cycling Ireland, it's very, very significant. It's a real, it's a real slap in the face for Pat McQuaid, because all week and ever since the EGM has been called back in May, Pat was always kind of playing down the significance of today's meeting and what would come of it, you know, if they voted for or against him. I think he always believed that he was going to get voted, given the, you know, his record and what he believes is a very, very good reputation, but that hasn't been the case, and very, very significant for the future of Pat McQuaid and indeed cycling and the UCI.
Yeah, just on the vote itself, the motion to support him was defeated by 91 votes to 74. Was that closer or bigger than you expected?
Well, I think it's a little bit misleading, because to start, yeah, as you say, it was 17 votes that separated him in the end. But before the vote was cast, the various commissions, Road Commission, Track Commission, the various provinces like the Munster Council, Leinster, Ulster, yeah, and Leinster, they all voted for Pat McQuaid. So they basically had a 32-vote head start before there was a show of hands today. Okay. And it was quite significant when they were asked who is against voting for Pat McQuaid. Most hands in the room shot up, it was very decisive. Even though, as I say, 17 votes doesn't sound like a lot, it was very, very clear-cut that he wasn't going to be nominated.
Like, is there any fear it could cause any divisions in Cycling Ireland after today?
Well, funnily enough, speaking to people up there, there was kind of a very much a generation gap between the people who voted for McQuaid, would have been friends with him, would have known him very well through his own career back in the 70s, 80s and 90s, and what the work he did. But then lately, cycling is really kind of... there's been a boom in cycling in Ireland in the last, we'll say, I suppose, 10 years. And what was significant was a lot of people who voted against McQuaid were of a younger generation, right, new clubs, new people on the scene. And the people who would have been saying, vote for Pat McQuaid, were very scathing in their remarks of some of the people who voted against them, saying they were Johnny-come-latelys. They didn't know the full history. They didn't know what he's done. Right. They were only jumping on the bandwagon. And I don't think that they did themselves any favours. Now, following the vote, it was very cordial and all that. Mm. And Anto Moran has just tweeted there. Anto Moran, I should mention, is the guy who called this EGM, you could say. He's always kept a very good relationship with the board members in Cycling Ireland that he was friends with and colleagues with for years. So not as tense as some people might have expected. But I think there was an air of... I think this was kind of expected, to be honest with you.
Okay. Like, obviously, you've met Pat McQuaid and you've interviewed him, and I suppose the man has taken a lot of flack over the last few years just from different people. Do you think this thing, though, is this different? Will this hurt him personally, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I met Pat McQuaid in December, and I've never met him before that. Okay. And I must say, I was very impressed by him. A very likeable fella. His passion for cycling was heartening and it was unrivaled. He could rattle off names, numbers, figures, dates, times. I couldn't fault the man for effort, and I know his heart is in the right place. But I think too much has gone on, and people are kind of saying this is a personal attack on Pat McQuaid, and it's going to be very, very difficult for Pat McQuaid to take that Cycling Ireland haven't actually nominated him. And he'll point that he's done a lot for Cycling Ireland. He brought the Tour of Ireland, which came here in 2009 when there was money in the country. He was one of the key players in bringing that, and that brought a huge amount of tourism, and it brought a lot of benefits offspring from that. So Pat McQuaid will be feeling very, very embarrassed, I think, as well. It's going to be very difficult for him to take it other than personal today.
Obviously, he didn't get the nomination so from Cycling Ireland, but get us up to date on the whole thing in Switzerland? Is that nomination still possible, or is there legal proceedings, or what's happening?
Basically, he lives in Switzerland, has done since 2005. So because he's a resident in a country, he's entitled to their nomination.
Right.
To become president of the UCI, you must receive a nomination from a national federation. Now, he hasn't got it from Ireland, but he has got it from Switzerland. Now, there are people against that. They think that he's being conniving, and he think that they believe that there's two people in particular. Jamie Fuller is an Australian businessman, and there's a Change Cycling Now group that they're investigating the possibility of taking a nomination from Switzerland. Not taking, actually, that's the wrong word. Of getting a nomination from Switzerland has been done incorrectly. And in breach of the rules. Okay. So Pat McQuaid has rubbished that. He's laughed at that. Now, he has, I believe, about a week to get that nomination, and it's going to become very clear very soon if he was bluffing all along, if it's not actually the case, because a nomination for the UCI presidency must be submitted outside 90 days of the presidency, or the vote itself. That takes place on the 18th of September. Okay. It's now the 15th of June, so... You know, it's the next week it'll all become very apparent. So it'll become clear, I would imagine, in the next few days.
Yeah, time's ticking. All right. Brian Cookson is a name who's popped up over the last few weeks. He's probably going to be the main challenger to McQuaid. He's the president of British Cycling. Is he a good alternative for you from what you've heard the guy say over the last while?
I don't like him, to be honest with you. He's been on the UCI management committee, basically been an underling to Pat McQuaid for the last number of years. I can't say exactly how many years he's been there.
Right.
But if he was so against Pat McQuaid, there's something not correct there, because he's been agreeing with him for so long. Now, he's the only guy that has come forward as another candidate. So, you know, there's only Pat McQuaid and Brian Cookson at the moment. Now, he'll point to his record of taking British Cycling back in the 90s from the point of bankruptcy to now one of the most streamlined, if not the most streamlined federation.
Yeah.
He's their president. They've won the Tour de France. They've been a revelation at the Olympics. They've built tracks. You know, cycling is now very much in vogue in Britain. People are on their bikes, and he can point, and he can take a lot of credit, and rightly so, for people getting fitter, getting on their bikes, and all that. Yeah. Is he the right man? I'm not so sure. He's not being good behind the microphone. He's not good in public. He comes across as very condescending, not a very polite man. It's hard to know. It's hard to know. But in the absence of a good candidate, you know, if Pat McQuaid isn't that, well, Brian Cookson is the only other option, because there isn't nobody coming forward for the UCI presidency aside from those two.
And do you think it's too late now for somebody else to come out of the woodwork, is it?
No, yeah, not at all. And people are saying Greg LeMond, you know, the US former Tour de France winner from America, people are urging him to come forward because he makes a lot of good points, and you know, he's a respected figure within the world of cycling. But I think it's going to be McQuaid versus Cookson, and it'll sure be interesting to see who gets that.
Yeah, very interesting as always. Brian, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Pleasure, Joe. Thanks.
Really, really interesting stuff there from Brian Canty, writer with the Irish Examiner and Sticky Bottle. But Pat McQuaid, and he will not be nominated by Cycling Ireland for a third term as president of the UCI. Really, really interesting stuff there indeed. Right, before we wrap up and hand you over to Stevie G, going to talk Cork City, because they finally got back to winning ways last night. An absolute wonder goal from Daryl Horgan gave the Rebel Army all 3 points against Drogheda United at Turner's Cross. Horgan sold several dummies to defenders before chipping the keeper from 18 yards. Absolutely a contender for goal of the season. Absolutely brilliant stuff. I spoke to him at the final whistle.
A win is a win is a win, as they say, and it must be a relief to finally get a win at home. Your first win in 5 at home, your first win in 4 overall.
Yeah, it was brilliant. We needed the win, obviously, and we were delighted to get it. I thought we really dug in tonight, and it was a real team performance, and I thought we were excellent.
One in Jerry was a cracker, not a brilliant one tonight.
Be handy if we get the easy ones, wouldn't it? No.
You said it.
No, obviously delighted to score, but as I said, it was a team effort. Everyone, even the three boys that came on, were all excellent, and they worked their socks off, and we deserved them tonight. We just needed a bit of a break. Obviously the back four were excellent, winning headers, jumping in front of things. I don't know who got the block at the end there, but it was brilliant. And I thought we were very good. We limited them a lot of the time. They didn't get many clear-cut chances, but when they did, we were very good at
talk us through your finish. There was a couple of shimmies, and there was an exquisite chip as well.
But I think I was going to hit it, and then I took a bad touch, so I had to turn back and try to do something with it. So I just ended up digging it out. It went in. I don't care. It's a goal. It's a goal.
Goal of the season, I've seen it described as. It was just one of those finishes that come along once every so often in Blue Moon, I suppose.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind a few easy ones, as I said, but come here, as I said, a goal's a goal, and we'll take it. 1-0, it's brilliant.
I can imagine the relief in the dressing room was something else as well, because you have been going through a difficult period. It has been a bit nervous in the terraces, I suppose, and I suppose you were feeling that as well.
Yeah, we were, to be honest. It kind of, at times, you try not to let it sink in, but it does at times, and boys be a bit nervous here and there. A couple of touches were right at the start, but we showed the character in the squad. Everyone dug in. We upped our game, and in the second half, the first 25 minutes, we were brilliant, and we didn't let them out, and I thought we were very good.
And it really gives you something to pick on and move on from here.
Exactly. You know, we have the week off and we'll come back in and we'll be just re-energised and ready to go for UCD, I think, the week after.
That's Darrell Horgan there after his goal gave Cork City 1-0 win over Drogheda United, and a real shining light in what was a really poor night of football at Turner's Cross. But what a goal.
Great goal. If, like, obviously you described it very well there, but if people are kind of looking for a similar goal, it was like people might think I'm exaggerating here, it was similar to the Eric Cantona goal from all those years ago against Southampton, where he just dinked the ball from the edge of the box into the top corner.
Yes.
And then he just
in slow
stood
motion
there. Yeah, and then he just turned around and stood there with his chest out taking
Brilliant.
In the applause. It was actually, I thought it was actually very similar to that goal, but he, I thought he was one of the best players on the pitch, and I thought Johnny Dunleavy as well in the defensive midfield role was very good. I suppose the first half very poor. City were a bit better in the second half. I think maybe over the 90 minutes they just about deserved it, but the win puts them up to 6th, which it looks a lot better on paper on the table anyway, but like just such massive relief even on the Cross last night.
Yeah, you could even see, we spoke to Tommy Dunn as well, not enough time to play him, but we'll have it online. He was just so thrilled to have finally gotten a win at home, and you could see the relief was palpable with him. So, and there was a great feeling on Turner's Cross last night after the win as well. Hopefully it's a turning the corner performance. We've had one or two of those this season already, so hopefully they can build on and move from that. There's a week off as well, which I think will do them the world of good.
Yeah.
But that goal, if this was in the Premier League, Sky Sports News would be repeating it non-stop on a loop for 18 days.
Yeah, they definitely would. Yeah, it was a great goal, and like I said, a good performance by him as well. And like you said, I think maybe this break could be good for the players. I mean, they've got a few nice friendlies coming up. The pressure is off, maybe just to get away from for a few weeks from the high pressure stuff, and come back re-energised, revitalised, and have a good push for the remaining fixtures.
That's pretty much been our show. It's been an entertaining show. We've learned a lot, Joe, particularly about birds from Mick O'Dwyer.
The arrival of the larks and the whole lot, the cormorant and what have you, is great when they arrive around the place. They had the cuckoo the other day. That's a real sign of summer and championship football.
Well said, in fairness. I mean, like, that guy knows a lot more than us. And when you hear the cuckoo, you know it's championship football time.
Bowed down to his superior knowledge, and that's a great way to end the show. Thanks for tuning away. Stevie's up next. We're back tomorrow from 6. Enjoy your Saturday evening, folks. The Big Red Bench. Red FM.